baseball is a massive business. There's 30 teams. There's 7 minor league teams under every major league organization. And so anyone connected to the MLB family is going to be part of this process.
The game movement in India got its push only when the HIV/AIDS epidemic came up. The way people look at LGBT, the way people make fun, the way people think of them as someone abnormal, that's one thing I would want to see just vanish if possible.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The U.S. Labor Department gets trans inclusive. Billy Beane goes to bat for baseball inclusivity. And sapphic nomads find life behind the headlines in India. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Jason Proctor.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending August 23rd, 2014. The U.S. Department of Labor has made official what the Obama administration had promised, issuing specific guidelines banning discrimination by federal contractors based on gender identity. The directive springs from a 2012 court ruling that transgender federal employees are protected under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans federal bias based on gender. Director Patricia Hsu of the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs wrote on the White House blog in an August 19th post titled Strength in Diversity that, "Today, we issued guidance clarifying that sex discrimination extends to gender identity and transgender status. Inclusiveness isn't just good for workers, it's smart for business." President Obama signed an executive order in July banning discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity by federal contractors. So the Labor Department is complying with both the judicial ruling and the executive order.
Chelsea Manning said this week that she's still being denied the gender transition treatment she's been promised. The U.S. Army private formerly known as Bradley Manning is serving 35 years in the military prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, for providing thousands of classified U.S. military damning documents and videos to WikiLeaks. An announcement in July said that Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel had approved the start of her treatment. In a statement to NBC on the first anniversary of her coming out as transgender, Manning said that she's been unable to live her authentic self. Prisons, especially military prisons, reinforce and impose strong gender norms, making gender the most fundamental aspect of institutional life, she said. I just want to be able to live my life as the person that I am and to be able to feel comfortable in my own skin. An Army spokesman claimed that the Department of Defense has approved a request by Army leadership to provide required medical treatment for an inmate diagnosed with gender dysphoria. Treatment for the condition is highly individualized and generally is sequential and graduated. Amnesty International has called for Manning's immediate release. The American Civil Liberties Union has threatened to sue the U.S. military if she's not given access to the treatment she needs and has been promised.
Elsewhere, a Russian nationalist whose viral videos showed him assaulting gay men has been convicted of inciting and fomenting cases of extremism and sentenced to 5 years in a penal colony. But according to the Russian government news agency Interfax, Maxim Martsinkevich was convicted for his racist and anti-immigration activities. No mention was made of his well-documented violent attacks on gay men. Martsinkevich previously served a 3-year prison sentence after his involvement with an ultra-nationalist group led to a conviction of incitement to hatred. The neo-Nazi was released in 2010. As the leader for the past several months of a vigilante group calling itself Occupy Pedophilia, Martsinkevich and his fellow bullies used internet dating sites to lure young gay men to apartments with promises of sexual encounters. When the victim arrived, he was surrounded, verbally abused, physically assaulted, sexually tortured, and made to confess his homosexuality on camera. At least one young man committed suicide after being outed that way online. Martsinkevich first fled to Ukraine to evade the extremism charges, and then to Cuba. But just days after his arrival on the island, Cuban authorities arrested Martsinkevich and began the extradition process to send him back to Russia. 9 of Martsinkevich's cronies are reportedly facing trial specifically for their anti-gay crimes.
An anti-LGBT organization in Uganda has fired its entire paid 55-person staff after it lost a significant part of its funding from the United States. Following enactment of the country's draconian anti-homosexuality law earlier this year, the Obama administration announced that it would cut more than $6 million U.S. dollars in aid to the Interreligious Council of Uganda after the multi-faith organization came out in support of the law. The European Union has followed suit. The U.S. mission to Uganda also took back 9 pickup trucks it had loaned the group. Some of those trucks have already been given to hospitals and other organizations in the country doing HIV/AIDS work. According to the Ugandan newspaper The Observer, the Interreligious Council may have also failed to meet USAID's rigorous accountability standards. The anti-homosexuality law was overturned on a legal technicality on August 1st, but efforts are underway to reinstate it. The law punished private, consensual adult gay sex with up to life in prison, criminalized the advocacy of LGBT rights, and required citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the police. The U.S. continues to provide more than $2 million in aid to other groups for the treatment of some 50,000 Ugandans living with HIV or AIDS.
In this week's U.S. marriage news, a federal judge joined 4 state courts this week to declare Florida's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples unconstitutional. Federal District Judge Robert Hinkle ruled that the 2008 voter-approved ban violates the U.S. Constitution's equal protection and due process guarantees. He compared bans on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples to the long-abandoned prohibitions on interracial marriage and predicted that both would be viewed by history in the same way. But Hinkle immediately stayed his ruling to allow for an expected appeal. Judges in 4 Florida counties had previously issued similar rulings, but they've also been put on hold after the state's Republican Attorney General Pam Bondi filed appeals. She had asked earlier this month that no further marriage equality rulings be made, saying it was up to the U.S. Supreme Court to make a final determination on the issue. And she's vowed to vigorously defend Florida's ban, saying this week that she was just getting started. The twice-divorced Bondi is up for re-election in November.
U.S. District Judge Richard Young, the same federal judge who found Indiana's voter-approved ban unconstitutional in June, reaffirmed that decision in a separate case this week by ordering the state to recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples legally performed elsewhere. Young's earlier ruling did not include a stay, and hundreds of gay and lesbian couples married in Indiana before the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals stopped them. With that in mind, Judge Young immediately stayed this week's ruling on out-of-state marriages pending an expected appeal by Republican Governor Mike Pence to the 7th Circuit. That court is already scheduled to hear the state's appeal of Young's June ruling.
It should come as no surprise that the U.S. Supreme Court has stayed a marriage equality ruling in the state of Virginia that was set to take effect this week. The 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a federal judge's ruling declaring the ban unconstitutional in July, and last week refused to delay implementation of the ruling. The state then asked the Supreme Court to step in. The High Court has issued stays of similar rulings whenever a state has asked it to do so. Justices are widely expected to finally rule on opening civil marriage to same-gender couples in their next session or in the one thereafter.
The 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has indefinitely extended a trial court judge's stay of his July ruling that found Colorado's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples federally unconstitutional. The stay was set to expire within days. A few county clerks defied direct orders by the state's Republican Attorney General John Southers and issued marriage licenses to same-gender couples after a federal appeals court with jurisdiction over the state ruled such bans to be unconstitutional. Southers then got the state Supreme Court to issue an order stopping them. Another marriage equality case is pending in Colorado's High Court.
And finally, a poll in Ireland this week by the UK's Sunday Times newspaper found 86% support for same-gender relationships. There'll be a referendum on marriage equality in the country next year. While prospects for opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples in Ireland seem rosy, polls are notoriously unreliable there, and LGBT activists are taking no chances. A long-form video by the Irish activist group LGBT Noise lampoons opponents of marriage equality who believe it will be the end of the world. In this snippet, a paranoid heterosexual couple behind a barricaded front door prepares a homemade video testament to the coming Armageddon.
This is our story. I don't know if there's anyone out there to hear it, but...
Any of our kind, anyway.
But it's important to leave a record of what's happened here. Back in 2015, Ireland had a referendum on marriage equality. Sure, we weren't one bit worried.
We thought at best it'd be close.
As far as we knew, there was maybe 5 or 6 gays operating in Ireland at that time. We figured if it was just them, things would stay the way they were. But it was their friends.
Non-gays?
Normal people.
They marched. They voted, loads of them. They said things like people should be able to love whoever they want, even though they could do that already. There was nothing in it for them at all.
I mean, if they hadn't voted, everything would have been fine, but they did. And everything changed.
So much equality. Ireland was practically unrecognizable.
You can find the marriage equality group behind that over-the-top satire at lgbtnoise.ie.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 23rd, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Jason Proctor.
Well-traveled sapphic nomads explore India later in the program.
Hello, I'm Billy Bean, Major League Baseball's Ambassador for Inclusion, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
When Billy Bean played the game, Major League Baseball was no field of dreams for a gay man. He retired after 6 seasons in 1995 and 4 years later admitted that it was the pressure of playing in the closet that had forced him out. Now the professional U.S. basketball and football leagues have pulled ahead with active out players. MLB brought Bean off the bench on July 15th to be its ambassador of inclusion. Chris Ann Eastwood and Wenzel Jones threw the former big leaguer a few pitches about his new position.
Baseball's a theatrical game filled with lots of traditions. Is this the first ambassador position that there has been in Major League Baseball?
Major League Baseball has 2 other ambassadors, and one is Roberto Clemente's wife, Vera, who is the ambassador of goodwill.
Okay.
And she's been connected to the game for over 35 years, and that the Roberto Clemente Award is a very, very prestigious
I think the top award. I think above all, I think that's the one of the most amazing.
And that's
award.
Given to the player who does the most community service within where they play. And it's really amazing because the amount of money generated in situations like that and how it goes to help, you know, underprivileged youth or whatever the charity designated by that player, it's an amazing thing. And then Tony La Russa is also an ambassador. He just got elected to the Hall of Fame, and Tony La Russa has been in baseball for over 45 years.
He has.
And so I was completely humbled by the title.
You're in very esteemed company in the world of baseball for all our listeners who are fans. I mean, this is big, big, big deal.
Could I ask a question here, though? Because I was just wondering, when you're the very first ambassador of it, do you just make it up as you go along, or did it come with a rule
book? That's a great question, because part of this process is we're defining the position as we go. And the process that got me into this accepting the job, we dialogued what goals they had, and I tried to explain to them all the things I've learned from the LGBT, especially the sports community, about inclusive dialogue, language, resources made available to all stakeholders, not just the players. I mean, baseball is a massive business. There's 30 teams. There's 7 minor league teams under every major league organization. You have general managers, managers, assistant managers, secretaries, you know, cleaning crews, snack bar people, construction companies, you know, it's endless. And so anyone connected to the MLB family is going to be part of this process. So my job is to try to make it palatable right away that we can have some resources made available as soon as possible. And part of that is the workplace code of conduct that now includes sexual orientation for all anti-discrimination.
But this is not just LGBT stuff.
No.
I mean, from what I have read, you have a very huge scope of responsibility here as in this. You're race, gender,
religion,
disability.
And part of the inclusive message is we want the best product for baseball. Baseball's being selfish. We want the best players in the world, and if those players happen to be African American, from Asia, gay, or from Germany, whatever, we want to make it possible for them to succeed and feel welcome, and we want the players that are playing around that person to know that MLB's philosophy is that we are all in this together. It's not about finding out who is gay or it's really about making the environment, making everyone understand that inclusion and acceptance is the name of the game. So if we start to see an increase in applications for jobs within baseball from mm-hmm. LGBT community people, people that are out, people that have worked in the corporate world and who have said, you know what, I love sports and I want to go work in sports. And now, from what I hear, I'm welcome here. You know, and it's just something, to me, once we, from the outside in, then we're going to see multiple players start feeling comfortable, and they're going to make that huge decision on their own. But they're going to know if they need a resource, if they need a friend, someone's confidence that it's there for them.
Well, and I think we cannot overstress the importance of having an example, because I read that you grew up in the military, and I did too, and there are no examples at all. You do grow up feeling like you're the only one in the world for the longest time.
Well, my stepfather is a Marine Corps veteran, and I'm the oldest of five boys. So that's what I think was where I had trouble understanding my own journey until I was in my late 20s. I had never met anybody. I was never around it. So it was is that thing, that inner dialogue that so many of us have in our community. There's a shared bond. I love when we get to sit down and share our stories, because we have so much in common, where it's really just trying to find where you fit in. And the thing about being involved in sports, and that, you know, I was so fortunate to be a professional athlete for a long time. I never thought for a minute I wanted to be out of that world.
Right.
But the job, it's not really an accomplishment, it's an opportunity. And that's the way I'm looking at it. And I have a huge responsibility in front of me. And I'm going to do my very best to build that bridge between the two worlds that should have been built a long time ago. There's so many great athletes who have not been able to completely be centered in the moment. And that's where all of us know, great performers, great singers, great actors, they got to be centered.
Major League Baseball's new ambassador of inclusion, Billy Beane, fielded questions from Chris Ann Eastwood and Wenzel Jones.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio, read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com, and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
Samoa, Mongolia, Nepal, and Kyrgyzstan have all been stops along the way for Katie Cook and Maggie Young, who call themselves the Sapphic Nomads. The storytelling partner adventurers quit their jobs to travel the world for a year in search of LGBT communities. Their ultimate goal is a film documentary, but they've been sending This Way Out audio postcards from their amazing journey. We almost thought they decided to chuck it all and stay in some remote lesbian paradise.
It's been a while since our last Sapphic Nomads report. And though we've been back home in the United States for a few months now, we still have some great interviews to share. This episode is the first of our four-part series from India. In the past year, India has experienced a number of historic advances as well as discouraging setbacks within the LGBT movement. In December 2013, the Supreme Court of India reinstated Section 377, a colonial-era law which criminalizes, in its words, sexual activities against the order of nature. This ruling was a major setback, since homosexuality had been decriminalized in 2009 when the High Court of Delhi declared Section 377 unconstitutional. With the 2013 reversal of this ruling, lesbians, gays, and bisexuals once again became criminals in Indian society. Then, in April of 2014, the balance tipped towards equality on a different front when the Supreme Court of India made a landmark ruling granting legal status to third-gender individuals. As reported by the BBC in April, the court is quoted as saying, "Recognition of transgenders as a third gender is not a social or medical issue, but a human rights issue. Transgenders are also citizens of India." The court went on to state that the spirit of the Constitution is to provide equal opportunity to every citizen to grow and attain their potential, irrespective of caste, religion, or gender. Despite the whiplash between major setbacks and groundbreaking advancements in the past year, the LGBT movement in India continues to work for equality. Leading the fight are a number of LGBT rights organizations throughout India. In this first segment of our four-part series from India, we talked to Shruta, an HIV/AIDS programs training officer for Hamsafar Trust, an NGO based in Mumbai. Shruta asked that we only use her first name. Set up in 1994, Hamsafar Trust became India's first registered charity working on LGBT issues, and over the years it has become one of the largest and most active promoters of LGBT equality in India. When we sat down with Shruta, we asked her what the current situation is like for LGBT people in India.
In India, I would say that things are a little stuck as of now. If you look at things culturally, things were a lot more accepting a while ago. Like the Hijra community, that's basically a religious cult of transgenders. They have been a part of the community and the society and have been respected for a very long time. But what's happened is, since colonialism happened, you know, since the British came to India, we had this Section 377 that was framed that did not criminalize homosexuality in particular, but criminalized anal sex. And as years passed, the British left India, we had our freedom, but Section 377 still stayed on. And that was used by the lawmakers to harass the gay community. Till a very long time, people weren't aware of lesbian issues. They did not realize that something as lesbians existed in the society. So a while ago, we had a filmmaker who made a mainstream commercial movie on lesbians. And when that movie was released, we had a lot of right-wingers, you know, come out there and say that, oh, you know what? We don't have lesbians in our country. And there were people out there who said, wait a minute, I'm a lesbian. You know, how can you speak on my behalf? So for a very long time, I would say things were a lot under wraps, you know. No one wanted to talk about it. What happened after that was the HIV epidemic, you know, impacted the gay community. So at that point of time, the focus was not much on gay rights, but then gay rights got a push because gay men are largely impacted by HIV. So we had an NGO that came up and filed, you know, an affidavit against Section 377 saying that it's not good. It's going to affect public health interventions. It's going to impact the gay community. And that's how the whole LGBT scenario got a push. People are still coming to terms with the fact that we exist, but I would say things are slowly and steadily improving.
Since gender inequality seems to dominate so many headlines coming out of India, we asked Shruta if she felt there was gender discrimination within the queer movement there.
I would say yes. I would answer that question in affirmative. Yes, there is gender inequality. You do see a lot of gay men out there, but if you have to interview someone who's, say, female-bodied, you would have to take a lot of time out. What happens here is, I mean, the gay movement in India got its push only when the HIV/AIDS epidemic, you know, came up. It's not a very good thing to say, but that's what kind of pushed the movement ahead, in my opinion at least. Now, lesbian women are not that affected by HIV/AIDS. It's something that's a very, I would say that, you know, I would say disproportionately impacts gay men, which is why all the funding came in for the gay, the transgender, and the bisexual men. On the other hand, there was nothing for lesbian women, because till today, if you actually go out there and look whether there are any studies done on lesbian women in India, none. So no one really can say as to what are the issues that impact the lesbian, the bisexual woman, and the trans men, because there is no funding. There is not much interest in what happens here. So that's what I feel triggered the initial inequality, and then of course the gender bias. I mean, you might still be fine with a gay son, because at the end of the day, he's male-bodied, he's out there. But if it's an unmarried lady staying at home, the society is going to raise questions, ask you as to why is your daughter not married? What is she still doing at your place? You know, the fact that women are at a receiving end or are at greater threat in the society as compared to men.
Finally, we asked Shruta what she sees for the future of the LGBT movement in India.
Gay marriages are great. I mean, adoption is great, but it's not going to work in a system where people are so phobic that they don't even think of you as someone mentally stable, you know? That's one thing I would want to see just go out of the current thinking system is the way people look at LGBT, the way people make fun, the way people think of them as someone abnormal. That's one thing I would want to see just vanish if possible. No stigma, no discrimination, equal rights that protect you at work, you know?
This concludes the first of our four-part series from India. In this second episode, we asked Shruta about her personal experiences of identifying as bisexual.
A lot of times people tell me that I don't look queer enough, and I'm not sure how am I supposed to take that.
To learn more about our Sapphic Nomads project, please visit our website at www.nomaddocumentary.com. Till next time, this is Maggie Young with fellow Sapphic Nomad Katie Cook, reflecting on our time in Mumbai, India, for This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Natalie Peoples, Jason Proctor, Chrisanne Eastwood, Wenzel Jones, and Maggie Young and Katie Cook contributed program material, thanks also to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out also thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Check out thiswayout.org for the whole story, mugshots of the crew, and our social media links. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes and Stitcher On Demand Radio. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Richard Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WRFN Nashville, Tennessee, KMUE Arcata, Eureka, California, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.